Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, is AJ Scholes, a great follow at AJScholes24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters over in Madison. And we're grateful for the support from our primary sponsors at Owner's Box. You'll hear a little bit more about them later in the show. Off the top, partner, the NHL player discipline topic has to be raised by us again. It seems like we deal with this every year. It's long been a point of debate for us, and we revisit it with the $1,800 fine that you poked some fun at on social media, levied against Joe Thornton for his stick foul to the private parts of an opponent in a game last week. What do you say?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing, and what I was trying to get at on Twitter is, like, these fine amounts, you know, it even said in the player, you know, Department of Player Safety, like, tweet about it, it was like, the maximum amount, you know, for allowed for slashing, blah, 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 like, $1,800. Now, look, for you or me, Paul, and, you know, probably most of our listeners, like, $1,800, that'd be a pretty hefty fine. But for a guy that's been in the league for, you know, 20-some years, is making even at league minimum $750,000 this year. Like, what does an $1,800 fine do for Joe Thornton? Like, it's nothing. Like, what does he care? So that's kind of, you know, what I was mostly poking fun at is, like, for starters, like, let's get these fines, you know, more on track. Now, of course, they have to be agreed upon with the NHLPA, and of course, you know, no blame for the Players Association. Like, they should do everything they can, right, to have these max fines be as little as possible. That's their job. But it seems so silly. Like, regardless of whatever the incident is, you see other ones where it's, you know, $5,000 for a cross check or something like that. And almost every time these tweets from Department of Player Safety says, you know, the maximum allowable amount. And it's absolutely nothing. So that's what I think is the biggest joke here, is that these fine amounts have no impact. So if you're going to try and stop some, you know, if it's supposed to be a deterrent, right, like, these fines certainly aren't going to be a deterrent for anything.
And that's what the point that I agree with you on the most, AJ. So I say hit them hard in the pocketbook, but also suspend them for a while so that we can clean up this aspect of the game that's pretty unsavory. I mean, sure, you get a bit of a chuckle when you see the guy writhing around in pain, because we've all been there, right? But the way that it happened with the stick foul, it could be lead to even an injury. So you want to deter that kind of behavior, and you stop it if you can. So I say make the fine more significant. I think we agree on that. But also make them sit out some time, and that'll also affect their money intake, because that would be without pay. The suspensions would be ruled that way. So again, do it early in the season. The message is delivered right off the hop. People get it, and we see this nonsense out of the game. You know, we've been trying to solve this problem for years for the NHL, and we're not the only ones. The Department of Player Safety, you said it, and I've said it before, they are way too lenient, and they need to be updated in terms of the fines and punishments. We're living in 2021, not the 1960s.
So, I mean, to be fair, I think Jumbo, you know, was just making sure, you know, the equipment was all there, just, you know, checking to make sure he's properly equipped with a, you know, groin protector, if you will, or whatever they want to call it these days. But, you know, just doing a quick equipment check. That's all it was.
Is that right? Well, we can laugh about it because it didn't happen to us. But, I mean, it's just something that we want the NHL to get it right. It's the best league in the world for my money. But these unsavory elements just bring it down a notch. Any case, AJ, for the benefit of our new listeners, and a reminder to some of our old ones, we are going to go back to our normal activity now that we've done the power play previews, the division previews. It's time to get into in-season updates about what's going on with each club. We'll touch on injury situations, updating the line combinations, and taking a look at who's hot and who's not. So with that, why don't you take us into the Anaheim Ducks with your quick snapshot of what's going on there.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing that's going on for the Anaheim Ducks right now is the fact that they're, you know, third in the Pacific Division. Now, of course, it's just four games in, but both of those wins have come, you know, thanks to John Gibson, who's had a bit of a career resurgence, at least here early in the season. Let's not forget, last year he only had 9 wins. That's his lowest total since becoming, you know, a full-time NHL player. So he's got 2 already. So I think we can all feel pretty confident he'll get past that 9 mark here. But perhaps more impressive is the 1.46 goals against average to start the year. I do think it's a little interesting. Now, I know they had a back-to-back in there, but at this point, it's through 4 games, it's been an even split share with Anthony Stolarz there. Gibson will go tonight. That'll be his 3rd of the year, and we'll see how he performs against the Jets tonight. But I do find it interesting, kind of the goalie workload early in the season. I'm not suggesting Stolarz is going to replace him as the number one. Certainly not, but maybe he's going to get a few more games than we might have otherwise thought. In terms of injury concerns, Mason McTavish and Max Jones are both on injured reserve, but those aren't really guys that I think would have a significant impact. Maybe Jones a little bit more, but so far they've avoided any major problems on the injury front.
And, you know, I'm pleased to see that a guy like Cam Fowler has picked up his game. This guy should be one of the premier offensive pieces around the league when it comes to defensemen. He's kind of lagged in that area in the last couple of years. But with 3 points in 4 games, I'm keeping an eye on him. And certainly Jamie Drysdale is another guy that they're looking at to boost the offense from the back end. He has a pair of points to his ledger. So some upward mobility in there in terms of the depth on the blue line. Next up, we look at the Arizona club. We thought that this would be a bottom feeder in the league. And off the first 3 games, we're seeing a club with an 0-2-1 record, AJ. So not surprised is what I'll say. And looking for offense is the name of the game for this club. And it's been wanting right now. But Clayton Keller is a guy that has kind of done what we expect him to do, is be among the leaders there. And ditto for Phil Kessel. They've each got 3 points so far. Lawson Crouse is a guy that they're looking for big things from. He's got to take the next step at some point. This guy was recently a high draft pick by this club. And it's time in his 3rd or 4th season as a pro to see something. Maybe we are. He's got 2 points in 3 games played, along with 11 penalty minutes. If you're in a penalty minute league, that's good news for you. But he also has delivered 7 hits. So that's the kind of game that this guy plays. And if he can continue at this pace, he's going to be one of those guys that we'll be looking at the end of the year as a breakout candidate. But at the other end of the spectrum, you're looking at a guy like Nick Schmaltz. I think this fellow should be one of the leaders as well, and he's been blank in 3 games, so want to see that change. Keep an eye on him. And Jacob Chychrun, a guy that we both highlighted on this team as well as being maybe the key offensive piece from the back end to be a scorer and a leader on the power play. So far, he's been blank in a -7, which is probably even more alarming. But on the other hand, we got a good performance out of Shane Gostisbehere. He's got 4 points in 3 games so far, AJ, and that's really good news for the Ducks to see a guy like him performing offensively. Maybe are we going to see something out of him that we saw a couple of years ago when he was Philadelphia property and garnered something in the order of 60 points? I don't think so. But to pencil this guy in for 30 to 40 could be a nice outcome for this club.
Yeah, I definitely think that's where it's trending, at least early in the season here. What's interesting is the ice time for me. You look at the last couple of years, his last 3 seasons in Philadelphia, he was averaging less than 20 minutes a game. He's over that so far through the first 3 here in Arizona. Again, it's early in the season to draw a bunch of conclusions, but if he's playing that much ice time, he is factoring in heavily on the power play with Arizona as well. 2 of his 4 assists have come with the man advantage, so I do think 30 to 40 points might be achievable for him. You know, again, you look at his top years. You mentioned that 65-point year. He was averaging over 21 minutes a night. He had 17 goals, 29 assists in his rookie season. That was the only other time he's averaged over 20 minutes a night. So he's a high workload guy and seems to get better with the more minutes that he has. So I definitely would keep an eye on him, especially in your leagues. I don't know if I'm totally ready personally to dive right in here. On Shane Gostisbehere, just because he has been pretty streaky, but it's trending in the right direction, so we'll leave it at that. I'll dive us into the Boston Bruins here. As always, it's that top group that leads the way, and they haven't played a ton of games compared to the rest of the league. We've got several teams have played, you know, four games already. Boston just played their second one last night. But they've gotten three goals out of Brad Marchand, two assists out of David Pastrnak. What more can you ask for? I mean, you could maybe pick on the fact that Patrice Bergeron doesn't have any points. But again, that's just through the first three games. So it's early in the season. I would, you know, express a little bit of a concern in terms of the net minding here. Jeremy Swayman has been the guy through the first two games. 1-1 record is fine, but the save percentage is sub 900. It's 885 right now. That's a concern for me. I'm not as confident on Linus Ullmark in his game in general. I never really liked what he was showing in Buffalo. And so, you know, obviously you want to get more out of him. He will play their next game tomorrow. They're playing against the Sabres, so not a surprise that Ullmark's going to take that game. And maybe that'll be an opportunity for Swayman to maybe get a night off, kind of reassess things from, you know, from a different perspective and get his season on track.
You know what? I'll pick up on that thread in the goaltending situation. I was a little surprised Ullmark hasn't played yet, but I guess the next game is against the Buffalo Sabres. Obviously, that's the team he came from, so there'll be some knowledge about from both sides that might impact the outcome there. But they signed this guy to a big ticket, AJ, over a number of years, so I think they're looking for him to take the lion's share of the net, and I'm surprised that he didn't get any of the first couple of starts, but I expect that to change going forward. And you know, he performed in a bit of a rubber factory. That's kind of impacted his numbers, but when I look at them, he had a pretty good goals against and a pretty good save percentage considering his circumstance there. And that's what the Bruins saw when they signed him. So I'm a little more optimistic for a good outcome for him there than it seems you are. We'll see how that plays out. But offensively, they've got to find some depth scoring. Taylor Hall is supposed to be a key guy in that regard. He has had four shots in his first two games, very small sample size. He does have a goal. There's a breakaway, a nice shot that I saw. But they need more support than that. And Nick Foligno is a guy that they're pointing at to provide some of that. Jake DeBrusk had been in the doghouse much of last season, AJ, but seems to be off to a bit of a better start. He has a goal already on his ledger. So there are some reasons for optimism in terms of adept scoring there that they're hoping for some contributions. And I've got an eye on Trent Frederick. You know, he's built like I like my players, rugged with a bit of a finesse around the net ability. And so I'm looking for that to show sometime soon. And I will raise a Spocky and eyebrow about Patrice Bergeron. He's heading into his age 35 or 36 season. He's getting up there in years. And you wonder, is this a year where you kind of see a bit of a regression in his totals? He's been blanked in the first two games, as you noted, while his wingers did produce a total of 5 points between them. So nothing to be alarmed about yet, but something to keep an eye on in the near future. Speaking of the Buffalo Sabres, though, AJ, this is a team that's surprised everybody so far. They're undefeated through three games and at the top of the Atlantic Division. Nobody saw that coming at any point in time this year. And it's been on the strength of keeping a lid on the goals against. They've only got surrendered four through three games, and 40-year-old Craig Anderson is received for two of those wins. I don't think you're going to hear these kind of rave reviews about us talking about the Sabres in the near future, even in the long term. It's a blip, and it's one of these early season anomalies that I think will correct itself. But in the interim, a guy like Victor Olofsson is living up to the billing that we had for him as maybe one of the on-ice leaders here. He's got 3 points to his record. Colin Miller is a guy that I've been high on for a long time as a very skilled skater and a guy with a really good shot. He got 4 points to lead the scoring from the back end. So looking for Rasmus Dahlin to kind of find his game for me is something of a next step. He's a plus three so far with a couple of points and a fine start for him. Any thoughts about these guys?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is not really being surprised by Victor Olofsson. You know, Paul, obviously you've heard me on our segments, our YouTube segments with DraftKings. I've been pumping him up in terms of DFS value for the last several weeks because he has produced, you know, pretty well to start the season. And his salary, at least on DraftKings, I haven't checked his FanDuel numbers, but his salary on DraftKings just doesn't reflect his production at this point. And I think he should be in line to continue at that level. You know, the other important thing for the Sabres for this early year start is Jeff Skinner scored a goal. Maybe that's a good start for them. You know, reminder, he had just 7 goals last year they're certainly paying him like a 40-goal producer, which he was his first year in Buffalo. Obviously, you know, the last two seasons have been shortened, but his numbers haven't really reflected even, you know, the fact that they are shortened. Now, I will say this about Buffalo's, you know, three-game or three-win start to the season. You have to look at who they played. Montreal, who's been awful. Arizona, who we talked about not being great either. And then Vancouver, that might be the one, you know, maybe good win for them. But even Vancouver is not like, you know, a lock playoff team or anything like that, at least in my opinion here. So it is important to gauge who they're playing against. I think the next three games are going to be a good test for Buffalo. They've got Boston, New Jersey, and Tampa Bay coming up next. So that'll be give us a better gauge of where the Sabres are. Like you, Paul, I anticipate that they'll drop back a little bit and not be where they, you know, where they are right now. In Carolina, some kind of shuffling up of the deck has led to some interesting line combinations. They're going to move Jesperi Kotkaniemi up to the top line, at least for tonight, with Sebastian Aho and Tuukka Teravainen, which means Svechnikov and Trocheck will pair with Martin Nekas on the third. And then Nino Niederreiter is the odd man out here. He's the one that drops to the third line. But really, when you're playing with Jordan Staal and Jasper Fast, like, that's not a terrible spot to be in. Again, it's hard to pick a bad line with this group. It is interesting to see them kind of shuffling things around already in terms of their line combinations here, especially when you consider, like, through the first two games, you know, Svechnikov has 4 points, including 3 goals. Teravainen has 3 as well. A lot of their production has come on the power play. You know, Svechnikov, 2 power play points, Teravainen, 1. So that is something to keep an eye on. But overall, I do like what Carolina's selling at this point, if you will. You know, their wins, again, the Islanders are, you know, set to be a playoff team, potentially Metro winners, if they can kind of fix some early season problems. Nashville, never an easy out, even though they may or may not be a playoff team. So solid wins. You know, if you're staying on later for our DFS advice, I'll just say this. Don't sleep on Carolina tonight. That's my teaser for later in the show, Paul.
You know what, AJ? I think you're onto something there, and I might be right there with you. But the line shuffling, I think it comes at an interesting time to put Kotkaniemi on the first line as they head to Montreal for tonight's game. I can't wait to see what the atmosphere and reception will be like for this youngster. It will be hostile, I do believe, because of the fact that he signed with this team and left the Canadiens on a rare use of the signing option that teams have to take people away from other teams. And he signed the offer sheet, and Montreal didn't match it. And now we'll get to see those two teams on the ice together, and it'll be an interesting dynamic. But Carolina looks to be just who we thought they were, and a big part of it, too, is Freddie Anderson has slid in there and looked really good in his first two games, and he has a great record against Montreal in his career. So there's a real tip of the hand in terms of where I'm going for my goaltender this evening. In terms of the next team up, Calgary, they've had an interesting start to the season, too, partner, and it's guys that are at the top end of their roster who are being challenged to live up to that billing, or I think we can anticipate there'll be some shuffling out of town if they don't get their act together. I'm thinking about the likes of Gaudreau and Tkachuk and even their top center, Sean Monahan, in the past couple of years. Monahan's the one that's lagging behind the other two guys. They've scored a couple of points each. And Monahan, to me, looks a little bit lost on what I've seen so far, AJ. And he's getting paid good money to play that position, but he might see the top-line role eventually to a guy like Michael Backlund in that circumstance there. And you wonder who's going to step up for them on the blue line with the departure of Mark Giordano. We thought it might be Rasmus Anderson, and he's got 2 points in the early going as well as 4 shots on goal, plus 1 so far. He's blocked a few shots. He's a guy that kind of mirrors what you might have expected from Giordano, and so that's so far it's a pretty good replacement. And beyond that, Andrew Mangiapane is a depth forward that I like very much, and he also has a goal in the two games so far, as well as a couple of shots on goal, hits. So he's doing a little bit of everything too, and I expect him to continue in battle for a top 6 role there. So that's some surprises and some disappointments in Calgary for me.
Yeah, I think another, you know, person you have to point to in terms of disappointment, again, early on, But Jacob Markstrom, 0-1-1 to start the year, a .881 save percentage, 3.43 goals against average. I mean, let's be blunt, that's not good enough. Now, obviously, getting five hung on you by the Edmonton Oilers isn't a unique position to be in today's NHL. They're going to hang a lot of goals on a lot of people. So, nothing to be really ashamed of there. But obviously, you would expect a little bit better when you face the Anaheim Ducks, giving up, three goals to that side. So I'll dive us into the Chicago Blackhawks, who have shuffled things around a little bit just today. Filip Kurashev and Adam Gaudette are out. Guys like Ryan Carpenter and then Dylan Strome, who's been reportedly on the trade block and hasn't played in any of their first four games. He's going to get a look tonight. So a little bit of a shuffle around there in terms of offense. And then interestingly, after kind of a rough start to the season, there's no way around it. Marc-Andre Fleury, 0-3 with a 5.63 goals against average. Certainly some of that is bolstered by the fact he got pulled in the game at Pittsburgh after giving up four goals on 10 shots. That's skewing his goals against average because for that game it was 21.8. But obviously, he has struggled early in Chicago here. So they're going to give him the night off. Kevin Lankinen going to get the start tonight. And I think that's a good call. I think they, maybe need to give Fleury some time to get right. Every single game so far for the Flower has been four goals allowed. And he knows that's not good enough. I wouldn't be too worried if I was a Hawks fan here. You're in kind of a weaker central, in my opinion, where, the third spot here, I think, is pretty open for the taking. Colorado will win it, despite their struggles. We'll talk about them in a bit. But other than that, I think they can get back into contention here after a rough start, but they are going to need better from the Flower here.
And looking ahead, AJ, they got a bit of a tough stretch. They got Detroit in their next game, but after that it's Toronto, Carolina, St. Louis, an improved Ottawa team, and then Carolina again. So it's going to be a tough row to hoe, but the leadership crew here is intact once again with Jonathan Toews returning to the fold. He has yet to figure in offensively, as you might expect. He's got to take some time to get himself right. He's a +4, but no points so far, and only a couple of hits on his ledger. You expect him to be more involved than he has been so far, and so I expect that to change as he gets a few more reps, and all will be well there. But his running mate for years and years has been Patrick Kane, and he's just doing Patrick Kane things. He's a point-of-game player, and again, will lead this club. But right behind him, Kirby Dach is healthy, AJ, and that's a guy that will be one of the leadership core offensively here. He's got 3 points already, and a guy that we thought would have some real upward mobility in terms of his point production and value to this team this season. But right behind him is a guy that I want to spend a moment to talk on, and that's Seth Jones. And I thought the move that they made to sign him as their linchpin on the back end would solve a few problems. And right off the bat, it looks like it has. He's filling in capably as a power play guy at the point. He's got a big booming shot that he adds to that mix. He's a big physical guy. And I think he's going to be one of the top offensive pieces among defensemen in this league for years, as well as his mean streak and physicality. So they got the whole package there, and I'm really high on him. Up next, then, we're going to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Jackets are a team that we didn't expect a heck of a lot from, and they haven't disappointed us too much, AJ. Well, they have two wins to show for their record. I shouldn't malign them so much, but I still have some questions about this team, so not going to get too excited, but I will run through a couple of guys that really the pressure's on them to perform, and it looks like Patrick Laine is one of those guys who's ready to deliver. 4 points on his resume so far, and 4 points with Max Domi, but the news beside Domi also deals with a rib injury that's going to sideline him for a while, and that's going to really hamper this offense because then it forces them to use Boone Jenner in a scoring line role. That's miscasting him. I don't mind Jack Roslovic being there as well, but the question for me is Jenner more of a checking line guy, and he's now thrust in the top line role. Jacob Voracek playing first line minutes on the right side. You know, that's when he was at his best in Philadelphia and was number one winger. They played around with him in the last couple of years and it really saw his stock drop in my estimation. And he's got a chance to rehab that image with a nicer role here that's more in line with his skill set. Gustav Nyquist is a guy they're looking for a big season from on the left side. He's been injury prone the last couple of seasons too. So I think you can expect a bit better offense out of this team going forward. But so far they've kept a lid on things that, with a good defensive structure. And they've got a nice goalie pairing there in Merzlikens and Korpisalo. Each of them has factored in so far.
Yeah, the goaltending here has been the key to their strong start to the season. Look, Merzlikens, two wins, .948 save percentage. You'd be certainly thrilled about that. And then you've got Korpisalo comes out. Yeah, he gets hung with the loss, but he faced 43 shots in that game, stopped 41 of them. So really a good outing by Korpisalo in that one. I blame that one more on the offense than anything else. You know, we talked early in the season that one player with an opportunity to step into a bigger role with Seth Jones going to Chicago was Zach Werenski. And so far, so good for them. Two of his 3 points have come with the man advantage. And really, he's, you know, discovered his game. He was dealing, missed some practice time, but it sounds like it's not going to impact him at all. He'll be ready for the game right around the corner. In Colorado, you know, the start to the year might not be exactly what they were hoping for when you consider this is a team that we kind of projected, pretty much everybody projected, to walk away with the Central. They're 1-2 to start the year, but you have to give them a little bit of a break considering they missed Nathan MacKinnon for a couple games due to his placement in the COVID protocols. Then Gabriel Landeskog was suspended. So we haven't really seen these guys at full strength, at least offensively yet. I will point out the one thing that, you know, we both, myself in particular, but both kind of highlighted was, are you really better in net with Darcy Kuemper instead of Philip Grubauer? And the answer so far is no. You know, 3.79 goals against average. You know, he doesn't have to be perfect, right? When you've got that kind of offense in front of you, you can win shootout games with that top line. But he needs to be better than that. If he can keep it closer, even to 3, like even all the way down at around 3, which most goaltenders you would hope to be closer, you know, 2.75 at your worst. But if he can keep it, you know, down around 3, the offense should be able to carry him the rest of the way. I expect it'll pick up now that those top guys are able to actually play together, though.
I give you credit for questioning the situation with Kuemper, AJ. That was one of your early calls. I thought that he would instantly fit in like a glove here. He has had a very nice run the last couple of years in lesser situations with weaker teams. And so I thought the fit would be seamless, but evidently there are some growing pains here. And they are not helped by the fact that a couple of guys are on the IR. Valery Nichushkin is a guy who I thought should push for second line, maybe third line minutes at worst. And he's on the IR, and so is Devin Taves, a young defenseman that I thought would really solidify the top 6. It's going to force them to use Jack Johnson and Ryan Murray a little bit more than maybe they intended at the outset. And speaking of teams that are rebounding from injury situations, the Dallas Stars are a club that finally must feel like the worm has turned for them. They've got Sagan in the lineup. They've got Radulov in the lineup. They haven't missed a game between them, although it's only 4 games in. And Radulov has already hit the scoreboard. Sagan, not yet, but the fact that those guys are in the fold and around other guys like Gurianov and Jamie Benn, this is a good core offensive core, AG. I think that there's really some good depth here. They got a couple of youngsters in there. Rupi Hintz is another guy that should be a prolific scorer in this mix. So I like their top 6 forwards a lot, and so we'll see how that unfolds. But they've suffered a bit of a blow on the back on defense with an injury that has sidelined John Klingberg. This guy was their power play quarterback for much of last season and much of the last couple of seasons, in fact. And now the pressure of that role is squarely on the shoulders of Miro Heiskanen, and maybe Ryan Suter is amply qualified to fit into that role. But there's not much news about Klingberg's hurt other than it's a day-to-day injury. I've got him in on a couple of my rosters, so I'm looking for more clarity. I wonder if you can shed some light there with the information flow that you guys get at the home office.
Well, unfortunately, the team's not, you know, not providing much more. They, you know, for all 3 of their guys that are banged up right now, that's Klingberg, Jason Robertson, and Blake Como, they basically said they are doubtful. You know, they're Klingberg skated for a portion of practice today. Robertson and Como are expected to do a little skating tomorrow, but they're all considered doubtful for Friday's game. So I wouldn't expect them in the lineup, at least for that one. It's interesting your take, Paul, that you feel, you know, Radulov and Ben just being healthy and in the lineup is a good thing for Dallas. And while I certainly agree, I look at their stat line and I think, oh, here we are again. Same old story with the Dallas Stars. Tyler Seguin, Alexander Radulov, and Jamie Benn combined for 2 assists, no goals, and their top guys aren't carrying the load. That's been the story for this team the last couple of years. So it does go to show you, you know, you can see different things with the same stats. Obviously, you're a glass half full guy, Paul, and see some good news for them. I obviously do not hear. In Detroit, this is exactly what we all predicted, right? That the Red Wings would be undefeated to start, or not undefeated, but they haven't lost in regulation, rather. To start the year, they'd be near the top of the Atlantic, right? We all saw this coming. You know, one of the things that I'll immediately point out for this team is that the good news is they're getting huge production out of Tyler Bertuzzi. He's got 5 goals, 1 assist through the first 3 games. Only one of those tallies has come with a power play, so he's scoring 5-on-5. But if you're a Tyler Bertuzzi season-long player, you better find somebody else to put in your lineup on Saturday as the team travels to Montreal, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. They're headed to Canada nonetheless, and he won't be available for that game. It is, in fact, Montreal. So that's obviously a concern heading into the rest of the week. You have to know if they're doing a Canadian swing here. It's just one game. He should be back in action versus Chicago, but due to his COVID status, he won't be able to play in Canada. I would expect a guy like Robbie Fabry or Vladislav Namestnikov will probably get the look on the top line with Dylan Larkin and Lucas Raymond. This is a team to watch right now. Nedeljkovic was shelled in that first game. He got the 1 point for the overtime loss and a bit of a shootout, but Thomas Greiss has been phenomenal for them to start the year. Certainly outkicking his coverage, if you will, to borrow an NFL term here. 0.969 save percentage in those first 2 games. I wouldn't expect that to hold up throughout the year, but he seems to be playing himself into more share of the workload. At least that's what I would expect moving forward based on his early start.
Right, AJ. I think it's worth mentioning Lucas Raymond's situation. I didn't expect him to be in the mix for a top 6 role on the right side here. Thought Philip Zadina certainly would be a candidate. And Jacob Vrana at the beginning of the season would have been, but he's out for months now. And that's why Raymond is getting a good run at the right wing spot. And as long as he's there beside Larkin and Bertuzzi, I'll say after the Montreal game when they get to play in the States again, playing with Bertuzzi and Larkin is going to be a bonanza for Raymond. He'll be a really interesting low-end DFS option that you might want to slide in there when you want to get some of the other big boys around the league into your lineup as well. So something to keep in mind. And also, we haven't mentioned Moritz Seider at all, AJ. And this is a guy who figures he's getting a lot of great press in the local media in Detroit. Talk about jumping the gun a little bit. They're mentioning him in the same breath as Nick Lidstrom. Let's put some cold water on that one right away. Nick Lidstrom might be, next to Bobby Orr, the best defenseman I ever saw play in the league. So that's very high praise. I think it's way premature, but it speaks to the skill set that this guy brings to the table. And off the start of the season, he's shown some of that skill as well. He's got 3 points to show for his record, as well as a +2 rating. And he's shown a bit of a physical side as well, with four hits to his record. So that certainly is in line with what Nick Lidstrom was all about, filling the stats sheet. But let's wait until we get a sample size of maybe a couple of seasons before we make that comparison. Certainly, he's got the size going for him, and right now, the early going, it's good traction. So they also have Nick Leddy on the back end. That's 2 offensive pieces that weren't there before. So along with Filip Hronek, they have 3 credible defensemen scoring options back there, and that's a bit of news for a team that is hoping to take a step upward, but they're in a real bear of a division here. They should be 3-0. They lost that game against Tampa. I saw it. They were up 6-3 late in the third period, and all of a sudden they started to look like the Red Wings of the last couple of years, and they frittered that game away completely in overtime, 7-6 loss. But still, they have two very nice wins before that, and a reason for optimism as a result. Up next, we're going to take a look at the Edmonton Oilers, and boy, oh boy, the top guns are firing. Didn't take long for Draisaitl and McDavid to take their usual spots near the top of the NHL standings. They're tied to lead the league with 8 points. There's another guy tied with them from another club, but they're doing what was expected of them. However, they found a running mate for these guys in Jesse Puljujärvi last year, AJ, and he's a guy that I thought would be primed for a breakout season in that situation last year, and he's continued it this year with 6 points on his resume. They also have Zach Hyman, their big free agent signing in the offseason, who has a couple of points as well. So it's not just Draisaitl and McDavid. They have some credible options around them. And just like I mentioned, the stud defenseman in Chicago, they've got a stud one here in Edmonton. And I'm all over Darnell Nurse. I'm in there for him all day. He's got racked up 20 hits already in 3 games, AJ. So if you're in a league that looks at that category, as well as block shots, he has 5. I drafted him early, AJ, and I'm really glad that I did, because I think the offensive numbers are going to be there, but the peripherals are going to be there, and a lot of the advanced stats too. He's going to be a guy that really fills up your scorecard in a big way. We talked about this on DraftKings too. I'll mention the name of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. He's not getting any love there, AJ, considering the price tags we've seen on Draisaitl and McDavid. I don't have an answer for that. This guy's playing top line minutes with McDavid, and he's also got 3 points on the board as already in the 3 games, and getting first line minutes on the power play. You got to help me out and figure out why his price tag is so low.
Well, I mean, you know, his supporting cast isn't, you know, Zach Hyman and Kailer Yamamoto aren't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, in past seasons we've seen him move to the wing either with McDavid or Draisaitl as his center. So, you know, the supporting cast isn't as good as it has been in the past, so that could certainly be part of the decision there. But I do agree with you. I think, you know, 3 assists in 3 games, 2 of them coming with a man advantage. Like, I agree, his salary should absolutely be higher here, Paul. I'm fully with you on that one. The one other thing to add on the injury front is that Mike Smith has unfortunately gone onto injured reserve for them with a leg injury. Now, so far, it's just your regular, you know, 7-day injured reserve. So he'll be out through the weekend, which is a concern because they have a back-to-back tonight and tomorrow, which means we'll probably see Koskinen tonight and then Stuart Skinner, a name you probably are not familiar with. In fact, I can confirm it'll be Koskinen tonight. Stuart Skinner will likely go Friday. I will throw the caveat in there. After those 2 games, they're off until the next Wednesday. They could get Smith back till then. So if Smith has a chance of playing in that Wednesday plus the extra time off, maybe they go Koskinen back-to-back. Might be worth considering in your, you know, your season-long leagues. If you're able to pick up a goalie late and he's going to get 2 starts, might be worth taking a look at. I know we haven't always been particularly high on Koskinen on our show here, Paul. But good start to the season in his one kind of deputy appearance. And again, if he takes both games with back-to-back, which isn't impossible, he could add some decent value there.
Well,
in Florida.
Sorry.
No, go ahead, Paul. What are you?
Well, I want to take us into the Florida Panthers. This is a team that we thought that would be a real factor in the Atlantic Division. And off the early returns, it looks that way for sure. They have rolled to 3 straight wins. And they've only given up a total of 6 goals against in those tilts. And I'm surprised to note that Sergei Bobrovsky has received for the first couple of wins of his season already. I thought that there'd be some questions around him and that they would be in a hurry to rush Spencer Knight into the fray. But right now we can say 2 games for Bobrovsky, 1 for Knight, and all victories so far. So it's all sunshine and roses over there in Florida. The guys up front are the usual suspects leading the parade. Alexander Barkov, I like this guy enough to pick him in a couple of my leagues this year early on, and he hasn't disappointed either with 5 points so far in the 3 games played. I think he's going to be easily into the top 10 scorers in the league. But I'm also curious to see if Carter Verhaeghe can continue what he showed us last year and off the early returns, it seems like he's certainly capable. He signed a nice extension in the offseason, rewarding him for that performance, and he's kept it up with 4 points in the first three games. And if you picked him in the mid to late rounds of your draft, you're looking like you're in for a good season out of him again. Another guy that we wondered how he would start the season is Aaron Ekblad. He's had a couple of checkered years in terms of physical well-being, but 3 points, including 2 goals, as well as a +4, tell me that he's looking like the former number one draft pick overall in his draft class. And then right behind him, a couple of guys that are supposed to handle some of the residual scoring, secondary scoring, if you'll call it, Sam Bennett and Anthony Duclair, each with 3 goals so far. So not many negatives to report here that I can see. Maybe you can find one or find some more positive ones.
No, I really don't. I mean, Gustav Forsling producing for them is kind of just a bonus. Brandon Montour has been seeing power play opportunities. So really defensively, they look pretty good in terms of being able to balance kind of offense and defense on this team. You know, if maybe there's a couple things you want to point to, if you really have to find something negative, I would have liked to maybe have seen a point or two out of Patrick Hornquist and Joe Thornton at this point. They're both with zeros right now, especially Hornquist, given his net front presence on the power play. You maybe would have expected something out of him, but that's really just being kind of nitpicky here for a team that looks really good. You know, we talked earlier today, Paul, about the fact that Florida and Colorado are playing tonight, and it's one of the few times this season that I think you're going to see Colorado as the underdog in a game. You know, it is in Florida. That obviously helps the travel there. So something to watch. That, you know, we were both high on them to start the year, and that certainly hasn't changed at this point. One team neither of us was very high on this year was the Los Angeles Kings. They are, you know, putting together an okay start to the year, if you will. You know, 1 win, 2 losses. The net minding has been fine. Cal Pettersson with 1 win, 1 loss, a .929 save percentage. Jonathan Quick at an even .900 there in his 1 loss. The biggest news for them is the offensive front. They've got their guy, Anze Kopitar, right there in the mix. He's that player that you mentioned with the Edmonton duo at the top of the standings right now. 5 goals in 3 games, 8 points overall, 3 of those coming with the man advantage. So if you were an Anze Kopitar drafter this season, that's looking like a pretty good move. Victor Arvidsson is showing up pretty well to start the year as well, 2 points in 3 games. Maligned at times during his stop in Nashville, but so far looking a lot better there.
Yeah, I echo your comments, and I think it's interesting to note that the old guard is still leading the way when you consider Kopitar and Doughty as their top 2 point getters. Doughty with 7 points, he vowed that he would still be among the top scoring defensemen, and he's backing up his words with a strong start so far this season. But they have built up the supporting cast around these guys. Mikey Anderson, Sean Walker haven't scored yet on the back end, but I think they're going to be productive. Alex Edler is a guy that I'm hoping can stay healthy here. He has been a power play quarterback in the past and could be the number 2 offensive defenseman in this mix. But I'm excited for this team because not only do they have Kopitar going and Dustin Brown, another veteran, but you mentioned Arvidsson in the mix now, and he's already hit the score sheet. We've seen some growth from Alex Iafallo in the last couple of seasons. They're excited about the prospect, Vladimir Takev, and he's got a couple of points already. So it's not just a couple of guys that are handling the offense. And then behind them all, in a third line role, is Philip Deneau. We know all about how his checking can stifle opposing lines, and so they're counting on that. And things are really starting to come together for this club, and I think the future could be bright with the changeover that they're making with some young blood. Another team that fits the bill in that regard, they shed a couple of ugly contracts in the last little while, and so now they've made room for some offensive pieces in Minnesota, and Kirill Kaprizov has picked up where he left off last season as one of the top rookies in the league with 5 points, and I've spoken very eloquently, I hope, about Matt Zuccarello being one of the top wingers in terms of being a playmaker type. He's got 3 assists to go with 2 goals, and at 5 points himself after only 3 games played. Joel Eriksson-Ek is a guy that has slid into a top 6 role here as top center here. He's got three goals as well. It's 12 shots on goal, though, that excite me. If he continue anywhere close to three, four shots on goal a game, he's going to have some pretty crooked numbers by the end of the year. And along with Kaprizov, I'm excited. They have a nice 1-2 punch on the wings with Kevin Fiala factoring in there. There were times we spoke about him in the last couple of years, AJ, when he just carried this offense for Minnesota. But now they have some breadth there along with the depth that they've accumulated on defense. We've talked about a couple of their guys in the back end, Brodin and Spurgeon, supposed to be part of their offensive mix and leadership from the back end. They have each got a point, but we're expecting them to be 30 to 40 point guys each, and that's a luxury that not a lot of teams can claim. And then in the back of the net situation, we're to look at Cam Talbot. He's been not getting the due that he deserves, I don't think, AJ. And that might come from playing in one of the less media-hungry parts of the States and Minnesota. Although it is a great hockey capital, I don't find that this team gets the coverage that I think they deserve when they're performing this well. They're 3-0 and only 8 goals against. Good numbers for Talbot and a good start for this team.
Well, Paul, I know you won't understand this up in Canada, but one of the things that has been talked about with Minnesota is what they call hockey fatigue. And again, I know this is a term that Canadians won't understand, but with every other level of Minnesota being high-profile hockey, sometimes the professional team gets a little undersold, if you will, just because people are watching their kids play at youth level. They're watching. They've got 5-6. D1 caliber college teams. So again, hockey fatigue, if you will, can be one of the reasons that's at least cited on why the Wild don't necessarily get the same level of attention that you might expect. You mentioned the goaltending thing. Look, we both were very positive on the season that Kaapo Kähkönen had last year, 16-8-0 in 24 appearances. And I thought, hey, they kick off the season with a back-to-back. We'll see Kähkönen right away. And instead, they just rolled out Cam Talbot for both games. I was definitely surprised by that. It definitely, I thought this was one where maybe we'd see close to a 50-50 split. That obviously hasn't been the case. And in the early going here, and I would expect that this weekend it won't be the same. I imagine that this weekend will be the opportunity for Kähkönen to get a first game here. They play Saturday versus Anaheim and Sunday versus Nashville. So I think we'll see him play one. But if you took him in your season-long leagues, you might be regretting that just a little bit. It seems like Cam Talbot has a firmer hold on this starting job than I thought. In Montreal, boy, Paul, you got to just be smiling from ear to ear. It is, for lack of a better term, a bit of a dumpster fire right now, a la the Ottawa Senators from the last several years. You look offensively, they've got 3 goals in 4 games. There's nobody offering much. Now, they did get Mike Hoffman back for their most recent contest, so if he can get up to speed, he's a player that I would maybe tag to produce here at some point. But you talk about, I always highlight Cole Caulfield. He hasn't shown up. No points for him. Nick Suzuki, another guy without any points. And perhaps more concerning for those guys, is the shots here. They're not terrible. Caulfield 11, Suzuki 7. But again, you and I, Paul, we generally like to see players, especially on first lines, putting 3 to 4 up per game, and they're not quite at that level right now. And then the goaltending here has just been even worse. Montreal obviously doesn't have the benefit of Carey Price, and we both thought, or maybe just me, I should stop talking for you on the show. I keep doing that, Paul. But at least for me, I thought Jake Allen could be better, and we're filling that gap admirably. That hasn't been the case. It's a .885 save percentage for him in 3 games. The one contest that they rolled out Samuel Montembeau for, he puts up a 5 goals against average, and really a disappointing start for Montreal on all fronts. There's really not any positives. I hate to toss it to you this way, Paul. Can you find a positive thing to say about the Montreal Canadiens right now?
It's a fun city to visit, AJ. How about that? But Joel Edmondson is a guy that they like to have in the defensive structure of this team. He's one of those tall trees that I've talked about for the past year in that back end. They're going to miss him for a while. So even more pressure on the likes of Petrie, Sherratt, and Weidman. Weidman is an interesting one for me, AJ. This guy is going to get every opportunity to be that second scoring center behind Petrie. He's also getting a look on the power play. So far, the offense isn't there. Is it going to last? No. There's enough skill and talent up front that this team should be much more productive than it is. So if I can throw a bit of a hopeful swerve into this look at the Canadiens, I'll say that they have more talent than they've shown. We're both high on Cole Caulfield. He's been blank despite having the double-digit shots on goal. That's going to turn. This guy's way too talented to be mired in this kind of a slump. And I hope for his sake he doesn't take too much on of this stress of an 0-4 start. It's going to be 0-5 in all likelihood in a few hours, too, from this broadcast. They've got a tough assignment with Carolina. But look, this team is not going to go winless. And they have a lot of pieces up front that will eventually start to put some pucks in the net. Tyler Toffoli, Mike Hoffman on the left side. That's an enviable opportunity for any player at center to play with either of those guys. Jonathan Drouin looks like a renewed player. So there's really hope on the left flank that there wasn't at all last season aside from Toffoli. And then at center, they're looking for big thing for Christian Dvorak and Nick Suzuki. To me, that's a more than credible 1-2 punch. They're looking for Suzuki to take the next big step. They paid him that way. And, of course, their heart and soul guys are on the right wing in Josh Anderson and Brendan Gallagher. There's a few guys on that team that I wouldn't mind on my side. I'll be very, very frank about that. The New Jersey Devils up next. This is a team that is off to an interesting start as well. And we see that the injury woes have hit this club already too, though. And that's a concern when you consider Jack Hughes is looking to be sidelined for a while. He's on the IR. That's a critical blow to this offense. That puts a lot of the pressure in the middle of the ice on Nico Hischier. Both of these guys were high-end draft picks for the club, and they'd hope that they could ice them for a period of time and look at what they have in the middle, but they'll have to wait sometime before Hughes is back in the fold. Zacha and Sharangovich, credible pieces on the left wing. I have a lot of time for Andreas Johnsson as well, and so they have more pieces offensively than they had in the past. I wonder what they're going to get out of a guy like Thomas Tatar, though. He was a darling in Montreal for a time last season, AJ, but things fell off later in the year for him over there, and he has 2 assists to show for his ledger so far and 5 shots on goal. He'll need to be somebody that gets 40 to 50 points in order to be relevant here. Other than that, I think they're looking for other people to come up from the ranks, and maybe Jani Kuokkanen is a guy that could be productive in a top 6 role as well. Jimmy Vesey is a guy that's been around the world in the last few years. He finally scored early in the season already for the Devils, and maybe he's a guy that fills a role too. So at least they have some options. And on the back end, of course, they've got a very nice piece on defense in Dougie Hamilton. And the hope is that he can be a linchpin that drives the offense here. But there's some room for upward mobility. A lot of people have to reach their best efforts in order to keep this team in the race, I think.
Well, you mentioned the injury woes. You know, Mackenzie Blackwood underwent off-season surgery for a heel injury. He's still out, hasn't played yet. Then today, kind of the surprise news, kind of out of left field, is Jonathan Bernier dealing with a lower body injury, and he won't play tonight, which means it's the Scott Wedgwood show against the Washington Capitals, which is not encouraging for the Devils. So you've got your top point producer so far this season out, and your best netminding options both unavailable as well. They're going to need, you know, they might be able to get past Buffalo, although we talked about Buffalo playing a little bit better to start the year. They might be able to get past Buffalo without Bernier. I don't think they're going to get past Washington tonight. I would expect the Capitals to put a licking on them tonight, to say the least. In Nashville, we've got not a ton of injury concerns with this team. They've been pretty solid, middle of the road team, for lack of a better term. Offensively, Mikael Granlund, Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi leading the way through their first 3 games. They're right there, 1-2. It's early in the season, but that puts them 4th in the Central. Again, we talked about it being a little bit of a weaker division potentially, so nothing to worry about there. I just don't know what else to say about this club, really, Paul. You know, they're getting solid production out of the guys that they need to so far. It's a small sample size, obviously, with just three games, and I want to see more before I really can truly give a good spin on where this team stands, because it is hard to evaluate on only a couple of games. UC Saros, for his part, despite the two losses, his save percentage is fine. The goals against average is fine. That's how I would describe Nashville's season right now. Fine.
It's fine. And you know what? Three guys that I was watching, three veterans on this club offensively, I wanted to see what kind of a start they would have. Michael Granlund, for instance, was the subject of a lot of trade rumors, a lot of them linking him to Toronto, actually, in the offseason. He's come out, burst out of the gate with 4 points so far. This guy is a couple of years removed for a 60-plus point season. It looks like he's angling for much the same to lead this club offensively. But more encouraging than that is the two-headed monster that is really eating up a lot of their salaries, and that's Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. Each of them at least can point to the fact that they've each scored a goal so far, and that's promising because they both have had struggles finding that with any regularity. So if they can pump up their average to what is more in line with their contract, there'll be a lot of broad smiles in Nashville about this team going forward. The New York Islanders, the concern in net with Semyon Varlamov appears like it's going to go by the wayside, and he's expected to make a start this weekend in all likelihood, so that's very good news. Beyond that, this is a team that's loaded offensively for me, AJ, as well as the defensive acumen around this club. So it's rather surprising that they're only off to a 1-2 start. They have to be concerned about the fact that they've stumbled badly against two of the conference heavyweights in Florida and Carolina. Maybe some home cooking is what this team needs, and they're quite a ways away from that, though, because they have a long road trip to start this season before they get to play in their new dig. So this could be digging a bit of a hole that we didn't expect from the Islanders and make their trip back into playoff contention a little more rocky than we might have expected. They look to be a lock for a postseason playoff spot, but I don't like the way this is trending early on, with a lot of goals against that I didn't see coming from a structure as so defensively sound as we forecast. At least offensively, they can point to the fact that Oliver Wahlstrom has been delivering the goods. He's got three goals. That's three of the eight goals that they've got as a team. So they need others to step up. Anthony Beauvillier is doing his part, but the likes of Josh Bailey, one assist, Brock Nelson, one goal, Matthew Barzal, one goal. This is point totals also for these three guys. They need to step it up. And that's really the part that's been missing here, as well as the lack of defensive structure that's led to 12 goals against.
Yeah, Paul, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Look, the not having Semyon Varlamov to start the year is a big, big issue. And the fact that they aren't playing at home yet. You mentioned now they will have, so they play tonight, then Saturday and Sunday, and then they have a full 5 days off before their next, road trip, which I think is only fair when you have a team that starts the season with 16 road games because of the arena situation. So if they can get through this with kind of a middle-of-the-road record, I think you call that a win, right? You start the year, you're away from home right away, unfamiliar settings, your top netminder's been injured. Now today, Jean-Gabriel Pageau is dealing with a game-time decision injury for him, so he's questionable tonight. So, there's all these things that have kind of chipped away. So I wouldn't be too worried if I'm an Isles fan. You did mention, rightfully so, that the losses against Carolina and Florida, who are better teams, and then the one win comes against Chicago, who's struggling early on. So there is – you could go both ways on it. You could say, there's all these other reasons they shouldn't be winning. You could point to the fact that they've lost against good teams, which is a concern. For me, I land on not being too worried about the situation yet. For the other New York club, the Rangers, things are looking slightly better as a 2-1 start to the year. Obviously, the big injury concern for them, too, really, is Kaapo Kakko is on injured reserve with an upper body injury. He'll be out at least until the 25th here, so he's got a few more games that he's got to sit out just from being on injured reserve, and that doesn't speak to whether or not he'll even be ready once he's able to be activated on the 25th, but he'll be out at least the next two. And then Ryan Strome has also been sidelined after landing on the league's COVID protocol list and all that. There's so much that goes into that. I'm not even going to project when he may or may not be back. There's a lot of factors that go into that. So some injury concerns to start the year, but offensively, Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, Artemi Panarin, and Adam Fox are their four leading point totals with three or more points to for each of them. Nothing to be worried about offensively. They're getting production off, you know, at both ends of the ice here, or rather from the forwards and the defensemen. So I like what they're doing. Shesterkin has looked really good to start the year, a .949 save percentage in three appearances. Not a lot to be worried about here, other than those dinged up players, in my opinion, Paul.
No question about that, AJ. I agree with your assessment, so I'm going to jump right into the Ottawa Senators, and they've got to be excited about the fact that their leader, on-ice leader and off the ice, frankly, is a youngster by the name of Brady Tkachuk. He finally looks like he's ready to make his season debut on the first-line left wing. That means that the value for Josh Norris and Drake Batherson will go up dramatically in DFS ownership, because that guy is the guy that stirs the drink over here. And I like the makeup of this team, AJ. When that's your first line, that's something you can point to with some pride. And then they're looking for the next step to be taken by guys like Shane Pinto and Chris Tierney in the middle of the ice. So that's a nice three pieces that they've got in the center position. And then don't forget, they've got a young guy on defense who I think is one of the better power play quarterbacks and a big-time minute eater in Thomas Chabot. All these guys are going to – I'm going to expect big seasons from them, and they all should be north of 40 to 50 points, and some of them even higher than that. I think Tkachuk could lead this club with as many as 70. So there's a high upside for them and a lot of excitement around this team. And I think – Matt Murray finally looking ready to resume action this season is going to help this club in the nets. He has something to prove after a bit of a subpar and injury-plagued season last year. I look for an uptick in his level of play. This team could threaten her for a playoff spot, even in the Atlantic.
Well, yeah, absolutely, Paul. I think if I told you before the start of the season that Filip Gustavsson and Anton Forsberg were going to play their first three games of the year, you would have expected them to be 0-3, especially when you consider two of those games against Toronto and one against Dallas. I don't think you would have expected them to come out with a single win. They'll get Murray back, as you mentioned, and he'll ease into it, if you will, with a start against the San Jose Sharks tonight. Potential for him to – that's a good game, I think, for him to come back on. In terms of the Philadelphia Flyers, they've got – what I would argue has probably been one of the surprise stories of the season in terms of offense. Joel Farabee leading the team with three goals, three assists. And then, you know, Derek Brassard is second on the team with five. Keith Yandel comes in third also with five assists. I think the big thing with Yandel is he's been seeing plenty of power play minutes. Two of his five assists have come with the man advantage. And that's one to watch. He's, again, another player whose DFS salary has yet to really adjust to where he's producing and where he's seeing minutes in terms of power play, and somebody that I at least have been targeting early on to the season here. The goaltending, on the other hand, has been a little bit suspect at times. You've got Carter Hart, 1-0-1. .921 save percentage. That doesn't really reflect, I think, what we're actually seeing, especially when you consider, you know, they had the 4-5 game against Vancouver, bounced back a little bit against Seattle, and then Marty Jones did okay, actually, against Boston, limited them to just three goals. But they've been relying heavily on the offense, 16 goals to start the year. And definitely showing a little bit of a different dynamic than I think we thought they might heading into the season. At least for me, Giroux, Couturier, and Konechny were the three I expected to power the offense, but it's been the second line that's looked really good to start the year.
No question, and I want to spend a moment to talk about the defense. They're going to have to shore things up to protect their netminders, who saw a lot of rubber in the Vancouver game the other night and lost in a shootout. Before that, only four goals against. They'll take that in a two-game stretch. But I want to point out the blocked shot totals for Provorov and Sanheim, 14 and 12 respectively, among the league leaders in the NHL. That's good news for them. And then they've got two guys who can pick up the offense and deliver in Ryan Ellis and Keith Yandel, both of them figuring out offensively, accounting for 4 and 5 points respectively. Excuse me, I better mark that. Sorry. So, anyway, back to Philadelphia. 3-2-1. In the Nets, we thought there'd be a question mark with Carter Hart and Martin Jones. Jones, for his part, faced 40 shots in his debut, turned aside 37, and got the W. Hart, for his part, has stopped 92.1% of the shots against him so far. So the early returns in the net, better than we expected. I don't know that we can expect that to be something that we see all season long, AJ, and so that's where I'll raise a bit of a concern going forward. We're going to take a break now, as we typically do before AJ warms us up with his look at the Pittsburgh Penguins. So you're listening to the podcast with Statsman and AJ. We'll be back with you right after these words from our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, we're back with Statsman and AJ giving you the Puckcast, where we highlight all the top players and even some of the disappointments around the NHL on a week-to-week basis. And we're going to continue that look in just a second. But AJ, it's time for you to give our listeners a look into Owner's Box.
Are you looking for a new way to play fantasy sports? Owner's Box offers two game types, tournament, salary cap, and head-to-head live drafts. All new players receive a $25 bonus when they deposit $10 or more on the platform. Be sure to check out Owner's Box's new Super Flex Salary Cap game, a revolutionary new way to play fantasy football that brings a new strategic alternative to the traditional season-long formats and daily fantasy games. The Super Flex Salary Cap format, available only on Owner's Box, removes the kicker and defensive position slots and focuses only on offensive players. Users will build their 9-player lineup while staying under the $50,000 salary cap. Large prize pools will be available throughout the season. The Superflex position, the main differentiator in the contest, gives the users the option to select an additional quarterback, running back, wide receiver, or tight end. Ultimately, it makes quarterback a premium position versus the other fantasy formats. And don't worry, listeners, Owner's Box has NHL contests live on the site for this season. Play the Owner's Box salary cap contest for free. Use promo code DREW, that's D-R-E-W 9, for a free $10 entry into the Sunday-only 50K salary cap contest.
AJ, you and I have had good success with our DFS picks so far this season. We urge our listeners to hang on to the end of the show where we're going to give our picks ahead of tonight's game. But before that, I also want to bring to your attention, I've fielded a few questions on my Twitter feed, and you probably have as well in the early going. And why don't you tell our listeners how they can continue to send us their comments or questions?
Absolutely. We definitely encourage you to send any comments or questions that you may have about fantasy hockey, hockey in general, whether it's season long or DFS, you can reach me on Twitter at AJSchultz24, and you can follow Paul the Statsman at Statsman22. We'll be happy to share the best questions that we get on an upcoming podcast as well.
Speaking of upcoming, our two teams face off on the weekend, AJ, so the battle lines are drawn between you and me. Why don't you tell me what's going on with the Pittsburgh Penguins? I'm going to relay all this information down to MLSE right after the show.
Well, it's nothing good. That's for sure. The Penguins, obviously, Malkin out until like December. Crosby came out today, will not be ready in time to play Saturday, so they're without him. And then this morning, the news that Jeff Carter and Tristan Jarry are both on the COVID-19 Ooh. Protocol list. Both players are asymptomatic, so they do have until Saturday at 6 p.m. Central Time here to test negative twice, and so they could still be options. But right now, based on all those center injuries, Evan Rodriguez is poised to be the number one center for the Penguins. And I haven't even mentioned the fact that Brian Rust is on injured reserve as well with an undisclosed injury that is labeled as week to week. So there has not been good news in the slightest on the injury front here. Fortunately, somehow, the Penguins are 2-0-2, so they've gotten at least a point in all of their games. Relatively tough competition to start the year when you consider Tampa Bay, Florida, Chicago, and Dallas are the four teams they face. It's not going to get any easier. After Toronto, they'll have 2 days off, and then they face the Lightning again, who no doubt are going to be looking for some revenge after the Penguins spoiled the banner raising there. In terms of Saturday's game, at this point, even if he is able to clear the protocols, I would expect that Tristan Jarry probably doesn't start on Saturday. The fact that he wasn't able to practice today probably won't be able to practice tomorrow either. So Casey DeSmith in the mix to start. I don't have any confirmation on that. That's just kind of my reading of things as far as the Penguins go.
So I should spend some money on that game, I think. I'm not going to back you in the corner and make a bet on it with you, but but this will probably be the game where I'm all excited and the Penguins will upset my club, so I'm going to keep my mouth shut and move on to the next
one
team.
One can only hope, Paul. One can only hope.
We'll talk about the Seattle Kraken. The expansion club has played five games already this season. They've lost four, but they picked up their first win against Nashville, and I got to give Nashville's media guys some love here. They sent out a tweet with a banner, a Nashville banner that said, "Congratulations to Seattle on the first win in franchise history." I thought that was a classy move by one of the better social media groups around the NHL. On the ice, you and I can both be happy for Jared McCann and his early start with this club. It was something that I expected. Once the Leafs weren't able to hold on to him, I thought this would be a guy who would be maybe one of the best offensive pieces here. He's a guy that fit in everywhere in the Pittsburgh lineup, and I was very optimistic that he would only improve his offensive totals, and happy to see that he has a good guy in the game. 5 points so far in the five games played. Right behind him, another guy that expected to be an offensive leader is Jonas Donskoy with three assists. Brandon Tanev, something of a surprise to get three goals for this club, tying for the leadership in that category. And in the Nets, they've had credible work from Joey Decord and Chris Dreger, but the workhorse, Philip Grubauer, his numbers are a little more crooked than they'd like, with a 402 goals against and a save percentage south of .900 by a good margin here, AJ.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing for Seattle in terms of gauging this team is that we haven't really seen them at full bore yet in terms of what their lineup could be. You know, Yanni Gourde missed the start of the season here with, he missed the first four games with an injury, a shoulder injury. They've lost, Marcus Johansson is another player who's out indefinitely with a lower body injury after getting hurt in the opening night game. Chris Dreger comes in as, to sub in relief in a game, and he gets hurt. Kelly Yarncroc was on the COVID protocol list, although he's trending in the right direction toward being ready. So we really haven't gotten a good look, in my opinion, at what this team could be. And hopefully, if they get Yarncroc back and he can pair up with Yanni Gourde and we can really see what that first line or really top six truly looks like, it'll allow us to kind of better evaluate this team moving forward. In San Jose, Paul, look, I think Erik Karlsson must have been listening a couple weeks ago when we maligned him a little bit for struggling and the fact that, you know, does the power play really work with both him and Burns? Well, he's got 4 points to start the year, three of those helpers coming with the man advantage there. So he's certainly powering the offense for them. In terms of net mining for the Sharks, it's been all Aiden Hill to start the year in their two games. Decent numbers of 1.50 goals against average. I would expect, you know, we'll continue to see mostly Hill moving forward, but James Reimer is no slouch. He'll factor in at some point, including tonight. It'll be Reimer who gets his first debut in tonight's matchup with Ottawa. Good spot to maybe use him, although Ottawa, as we highlighted, has been performing well to start the year.
Yeah, I'm surprised they're giving Reimer the start tonight instead of Toronto visits, hosts the San Jose club tomorrow, and that would have been something of a homecoming for a real fan favorite in Toronto. So I'm a little bit disappointed to see that split in the Nets, but maybe they're taking some pressure off Reimer with that matchup. The St. Louis Blues, this is a team that, look, a lot of people have really panned this club, AJ, but I've seen them in a couple of games, and they've played some heavyweights off the beginning, and they've fared fairly well. They've won all three of their games, and two of those tilts were against Las Vegas and Colorado, the conference heavyweights, I'll say, not even the division heavyweights out west, and St. Louis has come out on top twice. It's the offense that has carried the load, and we'll get to Bennington in a second, but the offense, when you see the likes of O'Reilly, Perron, Thomas, Barbashev, there are names that we expected to be in the mix, but Jordan Kyrou leads them all with 7 points, and if you picked him in a late sleeper position, he's full value for that because he's in the mix in the top nine forwards and getting a lot of ice time right now. And the shooting percentage, he's only got 8 shots on goal in the three games, but two of them gone in. You like that rate to be in, continuing, but you'd like more volume out of him. But the veteran guys that are supposed to lead this club have done so. And in the Nets, they've gotten some credible work out of Jordan Binnington, who has appeared in each of the starts and has faced a lot of rubber in those contests, averaging about 34 shots on goal against. And with a save percentage of 92, his mathematics look really solid so far. Next up, we're going to take a look at the where are we now? I lost my place. We're looking at Tampa Bay, AJ. And this is a team that, you know what, maybe they've got a bit of a Stanley Cup hangover going on here. I'm going to cut them a mulligan because this is a team that still has a lot of the key pieces up front. They've got a great start out of Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman offensively. Certainly the numbers in net have not favored the goaltending situation and the defensive posture that this team normally rolls out. Andrei Vasilevskiy sporting a 3-2-2 goals against average. What do you see in Tampa here that is a reason for this slow start other than maybe that hangover that I spoke about?
Well, obviously, the biggest news, you know, if you're a conspiracy theorist, which, Paul, sometimes I think you trend this direction, is Nikita Kucherov being injured again and placed on long-term injured reserve. Now, they're not expecting him to miss the rest of the season, but he'll be out for a little bit of time, and so they have suddenly that dreaded cap flexibility that comes with Kucherov being out of the lineup. I am not surprised that they're continuing to give Vasilevskiy essentially the space he needs to play through some, as you mentioned, early season jitters. They've got, you know, the ability to do that. You know, gave up 3 in a loss to Pittsburgh, then gives up 6 in a win against Detroit. It started to trend a little bit better with the 1 goal allowed against Washington. And so I think he's starting to play through. So I anticipate things are going to get better. But obviously, not having Nikita Kucherov does stretch their depth. And this is not the same team that we've seen the last couple of years. This fourth line is, at least for me, is not quite as encouraging as it has been in the past. You know, that really, the guys on their third line right now, Patrick Maroon, Ross Colton, Corey Perry, those were more of the guys playing fourth-line minutes in the past. So, they're not as deep, and I'm not sure they're as well-suited this time around to handle the Kucherov absence. But it'll be on Steven Stamkos, certainly, to do so. In Toronto, the Leafs are facing a layup of a matchup against the Penguins that they should absolutely win. just to get that in there, Paul, to maybe jinx it a little bit more, given all the injuries that are going on. If, you know, if I'm looking for the positives here, obviously you're going to point to Willie Nylander, 4 points in four games. John Tavares, 2 assists in 2 games. Mitch Marner, a little bit of a disappointment, I would say, based solely on point production, 1 assist. And obviously Austin Matthews just has 1 game under his belt after, you know, missing the first couple of the games a year. That's not one to be worried about. I would expect him to get on the score sheet pretty soon, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's Saturday. Paul, what do you have to say about your Leafs?
Well, I don't know if you saw that debut by Matthews. He had 16 shot attempts in that game. A remarkable record, even for him. I was shocked that he didn't score at least a couple of goals, including the overtime winner. He was absolutely unlucky not to get that in his call, and it would have been his 200th career goal. So maybe we'll see the 200th career goal in Pitt on the weekend. But in the meantime, there are some positives to report in Michael Bunting. I think they've found something here. The guy's got 3 points in 4 games. He goes to the front of the net. I'm not going to say he's a direct relative or mirror image of Zach Hyman, but I really like what this guy brings to the table. He has a nose for the net and hangs around there, and he's got a couple of goals just by doing that. He's playing with some good players, and so he's a good low-end DFS value play to pair with the heavyweights if you're looking at a Leaf stack on a nightly basis. He's well-positioned to be a part of it. And then Rasmus Sandin looks to me, he's taken the next step in his development. He's got 2 assists on his record, and he's playing the second power play unit here. So reason to believe that there is a new piece in the mix to help boost this offense and maybe the overall structure of the team even more. In the Nets, Jack Campbell has certainly taken the load, and he's had to because Peter Mrazek is out for a couple of weeks with a groin injury. All reports are that it won't be a long-term absence, and that's good news. But it also, if you're looking forward and you think Campbell's going to need a contract at the end of the season, AJ, I don't know that the Leafs can fit him in when they're already paying Mrazek $3.8 million. So this is a very interesting situation that is unfolding in Toronto. And then you throw in the fact that Morgan Rielly, their linchpin among their back end, is also a guy that's going to need a contract. I don't know how they shoehorn either of these guys in without dealing one of the big contracts. And it could be the last stand for this team in the Big Four if they don't go far. So a lot of moving parts in Toronto, but boy, they play an entertaining brand of hockey, I got to say that. And they are primed for some success if things do fall into place. The Vancouver Canucks, another team that is primed for success, in my opinion, AJ. They've retooled around this team in a very good way. They've added Connor Garland, a really nice piece in the offseason, and he's been everything that I expected and more. He's got 4 points already in the mix, and he's a feisty guy in the mold of the guy that I mentioned in Toronto in terms of ability to get around the net and be a factor offensively and be somebody that the opposition gets an immediate hate for. But then you also factor in the nice 1-2 punch at center. Elias Pettersson looks to be back and healthy, and we remember how he was a couple of years ago. He hasn't reached that level of play in the early going yet, but if he can get there, him and Horvat, that's a heck of a 1-2 punch in the middle of the ice.
Well, and I think it's important to note that Brock Besser is only 1 game back from injury, so they haven't had him available to start the season, which has, you know, stretched the depth here a little bit. I definitely like their lineup better when they can put Pettersson and Besser together on a line and give them a little more punch. They've been able to also move JT Miller into a third-line center role, which I think gives them another scoring option here. The concern is obviously Quinn Hughes on the back end. He's missed 1 game. He'll be a game-time call tonight. If you're a Canucks fan, obviously you want to see him play as soon as possible. In Vegas, injuries have been the name of the game for this team to start the season. They've got Max Pacioretty out long-term. Mark Stone continues to be out of the lineup with a lower body injury, though good news on his front is that he won't need surgery and was classified as like more than day-to-day but less than week-to-week than Coach Pete DeBoer. They did just get Nicholas Waugh back. That'll certainly improve their depth here. Mattias Janmark today was able to clear COVID protocols and join the team at practice. So trending in the right direction, but they are going to continue to be out here in the short term with two of their best players. And I think that really leans heavily on Jonathan Marchessault to really find something in his game. Evgeny Dadonov is another player that I think needs to step up with those guys unavailable. And on the back end, they have plenty of options, but you never want to lose a guy like Alec Martinez, another player. No real indication or update on his status after leaving Wednesday's game with an undisclosed injury, and one to monitor here. So it's been all about the injuries, guys, in and out of the lineup for the Vegas Golden Knights to start the year.
There's no truth to the rumor that you have a voodoo doll there with Marc-Andre Fleury's number in a Vegas uniform, is there? I can't believe all the misfortune that Vegas has had since they let the veteran goalie go, and I think you have something to do with it in any case. The Washington Capitals, a team that has been relying on their top-end players to deliver, has seen their signature guy burst out of the gate. Alexander Ovechkin, 4 goals in 3 games played. One of them was an empty netter, but the other three have been the Pat Nadeau slapper and wrist shots, and so he's in fine form. And his running mate so far has been Evgeny Kuznetsov. He hasn't missed a beat with missing on Nick Backstrom, who will be out for a little while yet. But the Capitals' offense is coming from a familiar face of Tom Wilson, 4 assists, John Carlson, Dmitry Orlov, partnered with Carlson, factors in. Beyond that, TJ Oshie lagging these guys with only 2 points in 3 games, but still on the scoreboard. So it's their veteran guys that have carried the load. And I have a lot of time for Anthony Mantha, who is also being featured on the number one power play. He's kind of in Ovi's shadow. We talked about him earlier today on DraftKings. Segment that we were on, and I am really big on this guy, and I think he's the centerpiece for the second scoring line here for years to come.
I think the interesting thing to continue to watch here is the goalie split. You know, Vitek Vanecek got the first 2 games, then Ilya Samsonov did finally get the third one here. Both guys performing decently well. Vanecek's numbers are a little bit better. No news yet as far as, you know, recording time here on who's going to start tonight for them against the Devils, but it's definitely a situation to watch. It looks like maybe Vanecek has the inside track here over Samsonov to start, but I would imagine Hot Hand will keep the goal for much of the year. In Winnipeg, this is another team, much like the Golden Knights, that injuries, well, not really injuries, but absences rather, have been kind of key here. Blake Wheeler was put on the COVID, tested positive for COVID-19, and unfortunately he's dealing with symptoms, which, again, not to get too much in the weeds, but that means you have a minimum 10-day quarantine when that happens. So he won't be back until the 28th at the earliest, assuming everything else trends in the right direction for them. And then today, this morning, they put their number one center, Mark Scheifele, goes on the COVID protocol list. Now, the difference there is that Scheifele already has tested negative once. He's asymptomatic, so there is the possibility that Scheifele will still play tonight's game. He's awaiting the results of a second test. We won't know the details of that really until closer to puck drop. So if you are a Scheifele owner or want to use him in DFS, or really conversely want to look at John Gibson in DFS, you're going to need to like check this one basically when the team hits the ice for warmups, I think, to see whether or not Scheifele's in the game. But that completely shifts a lot of strategy in terms of fantasy in general for this team if they have both Wheeler and Scheifele out of the lineup tonight.
No question about that at all, partner. A lot of people north of the border, they like to give a hot list for the Canadian teams, and everybody at the beginning of the season had a lot of people had Winnipeg Jets as the top team in Canada this season, and certainly their early struggles are making that a higher mountain to climb than I anticipated. I thought they'd be right in contention from the get-go. But missing Scheifele and Wheeler, I think that would be a knife through the heart of this offense, but they can still point to the likes of Pierre-Luc Dubois and Paul Stastny to center the top two lines, and that's a very credible option. Andrew Kopp can move up to a second scoring line, but the question mark for me is on the left side. Do they put Jansen Harkins or Evgeny Svechnikov in that role? So you can see that losing two key guys like Scheifele and Wheeler will impact the offensive depth there and put more pressure on the defensive structure. And Connor Hellebuyck hasn't been exactly lights out in the goaltending department so far, so he'll be challenged to lower a goals against average that's well north of 4 at the moment. So that's our first turnaround the league in after a week, partner. And we now will turn our attention to DraftKings lineup that you put together ahead of tonight's busy schedule.
Yeah, so for me, I'm really going to key in on two matchups that I want to target here. And I tip my hand to Carolina against Montreal. The Habs are just struggling really bad. So I'm going to full-on stack that first line, which you're able to do because Jesperi Kotkaniemi is only $3,400 on DraftKings. So you save on him. You spend up a little more for Sebastian Aho at $6,100 and Tuukka Teravainen at $6,300. So I'll go the full first line, and then I'm going to go two-thirds of the Washington line. I talked about the fact that Wedgwood is getting the start tonight. That's obviously a big concern. If you're a Devils fan, they won't have Jack Hughes tonight. So Kuznetsov at $5,900 rounds out my centers. And Ovechkin, I think paying up for him in this spot at $8,200 really makes a lot of sense. So my entire kind of center and wing positions filled with those two groups. In terms of defense, I'm going to go a high-low here. It's kind of a favorite target of mine, so I'll start by going high with the no-brainer pick, and that's Adam Fox. Yes, a heavy price tag at $6,600 here, but if you pair him with a guy like Nick Leddy, who has seen a decent amount of power play minutes of late, including 320 in their last game, that was actually more power play minutes than Filip Hronek. And I think he can offer some kind of a bit of an offensive production. And at $3,800, you know, if he can pick up like one assist or maybe even just put up a couple shots, I think you'll be pretty happy with that. My utility guy tonight is going to be Zach Parise. He's lined up to actually move to center if Peugeot is out. And I don't really mind that at $2,500. It's a bit of a toss-away spot, I'll admit. But that third line for the Islanders can produce. They are going up against Columbus, who's gotten really good net mining to start the year. But I think this is kind of a different animal for them. And I would expect maybe some depth guys can get a few points. In between the nets, I am going to go with kind of the risky play. This is a GPP option for you for sure. I'm not sure I would do this in a cash game, but John Gibson for Anaheim, $6,800 tonight. Very cheap, has performed very well to start the year. And again, for sure, no Scheifele tonight and possibly no Wheeler either. And I think that would be all the more reason to kind of fade the Winnipeg Jets tonight. And that's why I'll use John Gibson in net.
I really like the look of that lineup, AJ. And I haven't said that often enough about your picks, I find, even though you've had a very high success rate. So kudos you for going that route. I'm going to go a little bit different route, picking a few players from different teams here. No real stacks in mind when I review the roster, but I think it'll make sense at the end of the day when I get paid here. So at center ice, I'm sacrificing a look at some of the bigger options and going down the list, but I'm still getting two guys that are number one centers with their respective clubs, and they have favorable matchups, albeit they're both on the road. I'll begin with Bo Horvat at center for Vancouver. He's had a very nice early season beginning to the campaign, and the Canucks look like they're poised to be one of the more improved teams in the league. You mentioned there were some current concerns with the early going in the nets for that club, but I think that'll get straightened away. Marcus Markstrom, for me, is going to be a guy that's in contention for the Vezina Trophy by the end of the season. That's my hot take on the Vancouver team right now. I'll pair him with Matthew Barzal at center for the Islanders. He's clearly the most dynamic forward in a team that's pretty deep. They've had some struggles early on, but I don't think tonight will be adding to that as they visit Columbus, a team that's played well so far, but I think is in over their heads with the visiting Islanders on tap. Then Florida and Colorado, that's the game of the night for sure, and I'll be looking for some of the big guys to trade big blows against one of them. This has the makings of a big heavyweight prize fight, and I think it's going to be a high-scoring affair, and Jonathan Huberdeau factors in as the most expensive guy on my team. I've fitted him for $7,700, looking for a big game for him, not only on regular shift, but on the power play. There'll be a parade to the penalty box in this one, I think, too. And while you panned the Jets at center and the top-end guys, I still have to find a way to get Kyle Connor into the mix. He's had a very nice start to his season, And with the other two guys missing, he'll be a real focal point of their offense tonight. I think he will deliver. He's a clutch player for this team and part of their leadership core, and he knows what's at stake, and he wants to continue his early success, and a good shot to do it against Anaheim, I think. Then a couple of defensemen that I spoke about in glowing terms earlier on are cheap on the board tonight, and I needed to go this route to fit in some of the big money I spent elsewhere. Moritz Seider for the Red Wings against the visiting Calgary Flames, I think, is a guy that I got to pin my hopes on. And then Cam Fowler, another one for $4,000, is a guy that factors into the mix for the visiting Ducks as they face Winnipeg tonight. Then rounding out my squad on the wings, extra forward positions, I've got Ryan Nugent-Hopkins for $6,200 with Edmonton visiting Arizona. It could be a points night for the visitors. It could be a points night any time that McDavid and Draisaitl suit up. And so far, Nugent-Hopkins has been along for the ride, as I said. And then I also highlighted Anthony Mantha for Washington. Alex Ovi-Light, I'm calling him. He's a big, strong guy with a great shot and factors into the top-line power play as well as playing second-line minutes as the trigger guy there. And in goal, I already tipped my hand on this. Freddie Anderson brings his 12-4-2 mark against Montreal in his career into this tilt. And I'm going to love looking at the internet tomorrow when I see Montreal an 0-5 record after that one. AJ, that wraps up our look around the league in the first week of the NHL. We apologize for going long, but we got to talk about 32 teams. So we encourage you to hang in with us to at least cover your favorite teams off. And we're going to give you tips on who's hot and who's not, tell you the injury news, and we hope you like what you heard. If you have any suggestions for us to change course or do something different, please don't hesitate to send the notes our way. We thank you for listening to the podcast with Statsman and AJ. And partner, any final notes before we go off into the sunset today?
No, I'll just add that I wrote down that the nicest thing Paul Bruno could say about the Montreal Canadiens is they won't go winless.
I like it. It just won't happen tonight, partner. That's my thought. In any case, that wraps up our look around the league in the first regular season episode of the podcast with Statsman and AJ. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we encourage you to check out our sponsored Owner's Box. You'll be glad you did. In the meantime, as always, please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen into podcasts to get our tips to stay ahead of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.